Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to my good bad brain. I'm a normal person, so I'm insane. I've got depression and ADHD, but I'm doing better since I medicated me. I'm still not always sure whether I exist or what being a person even really is, but I figured out a long time ago that being alive is beautiful.
Hi, everyone. Thanksgiving week. I actually, today's episode is with my buddy Jay, who I do jiu-jitsu with, and he's a veteran of the armed forces, and I recorded him last week for Veterans Day. I guess this is a week after Veterans Day, but we talk about PTSD. He's really cool and open about his experiences and stuff. And it gave me some interesting perspective on military stuff, veteran stuff, really. I mean, I think there's a weird thing in our country where a lot of military people, there's almost like a military class, you know, it's like there's like this separate subset of people, and a lot of like, you know, families, you know, ancestors down, that they'll be like military families. And I don't know, I really think that's not a good model in general. I understand why we've shifted to a volunteer military, but in a macro sense, I think it's unfortunate that there feels like a bit of a divide between people who are of the warrior class and normal, quote unquote, people, you know, just civilians. I don't know if I want to say too much more about it right now. I think Jay's an amazing guy, and learning more about his life and how he wound up in the military and things he'd been exposed to early on and continued to, he's just an amazing person. I don't know. He's so kind and just like got good energy and soft-spoken. I know him predominantly because of jiu-jitsu. And jiu-jitsu creates a weird knowing of people where, what's my computer making sounds? Where sometimes I don't even remember people's names. We talked about that in this podcast a little bit. Sometimes I know their Instagram names better than their real names, but you know them so intimately. I mean, you're trying to kill each other, but like, because you've agreed to consensually. And I'm not going to go too philosophic about it, because we talk about martial arts a lot in this, and he talks a lot about how he wound up getting help and his feelings around being around people who are veterans and have been part of that world and people who aren't. And I just think it's a fascinating, lovely talk, and I was so grateful that he was willing to come on, open up, and talk about it. I'm hoping to have, I got a couple friends. This was a long time in the making. I have a few veteran friends, and I'm hoping to get more of them to talk on here too, because I think it's, there's something we can all learn from these experiences. Everyone has trauma in their life from something, and there are obviously very different types of traumatic situations, and those of war are horrifying to even imagine. And I think people who go through those very extreme versions of trauma, like, you know, we can, I don't know, our body chemicals, I think, don't know the difference. They just know, like, I was thinking, like, you know, the anxiety that we get, the hormone blast we get from fucking work emails is the same mechanism that your body had for running away from tigers, you know? And so people who have been in the fire and worked through it and dealt with it somehow, or are trying to, I think can be wonderful teachers for us in our own smaller lives, you know? I thought I'd also just say something, you know, it's Thanksgiving week. And I don't know, I sat in silence for a while thinking before starting to record this about this idea of gratitude. I was making me think attitude of gratitude, you know? How can you be hateful with a plate full of grateful? And I don't, gratitude practices, I feel like, should be a daily thing. And it's hard to talk about gratitude practices without feeling so fucking corny, I think. But it's really real. Like, I think it's really related to, like, the idea of living in inquiry, you know? That there's a wonder that you can apply to your world, and that appreciation of it. I remember in high school learning about existentialism. We did this like unit on existentialism, you know, and it just stuck with me so hard that they talked about this idea of bad faith and good faith existentialism. And that basically, you know, you would have the same basic understanding of the universe and this existentialism thing. My favorite way to understand it was in the movie I Heart Huckabees. I think Dustin Hoffman's character is trying to explain something to someone, maybe Mark Wahlberg's character, and he has this blanket and he goes, okay, see this blanket? This is you, this is me, this is the universe, this is everything. And then he starts putting his, no, what is it? He goes to the blanket, goes, this blanket is everything. This is the universe. This is everything in reality, okay? And then he like pokes his finger up underneath one part and he goes, and this is you. And then he pokes his finger up underneath another part of the blanket. He goes, and this is me. He goes, and then another spot. He goes, and this is a chair and this is a tree and whatever, this kind of thing. And he goes, do you get it? Do you understand what I'm saying? And then Mark Wahlberg just goes, no. And he moves on to the next thing. It's like this very quippy, fast thing. But I was like, damn, that's a good way to explain this idea. Everything is everything. And also this idea that like everything is everything and it's absurd. We don't understand it. Even the idea of like existence and the Big Bang and all this stuff, like how what sense does any of it make? It's like an accident. We're like mold on a cheese. And that once you come to that realization, you can kind of fall down that peak one of two ways. Either bad faith existentialism, which is like nothing matters and so I can do anything I want and there's no rules and nothing and you just fucking live selfishly in solipsism, whatever. Or you go, come to the realization like nothing matters and that's why it does. Like the absurd wonder of this one in infinity chance of any of this being here, like beauty and love and humor and friendship and sandwiches and coffee and lavender soap, you know, like existence, even the ugly parts of it and the hard parts of it, just the struggling, kicking, livingness of existence, this fecund, respirating thing, this feeling that like just reality is alive, is so wonderful that we should do everything we can to cherish it and respect it and enjoy it. Even to me, like hard things, like being grateful for the pain we get to feel, because what a rich existence it is. The poetry that exists in, you know, decay, certainly. And I don't know if there's a way that we can recontextualize even negative feelings into this idea of just, this is part of living. This is part of existence and being alive and how wonderful that is. I don't know. I think it can be a hard concept because, again, it's this fine line always of like not creating no boundaries in ourselves, not creating allowance for every trespass that we suffer, every pain that we feel, and justifying it as it's something that we should be going through all the time. But creating ownership around it by appreciating it for its strange and difficult sometimes beauty. And to me, that's gratitude practice, is even in like the depths of misery or pain. And I know you're preaching to the choir when I'm saying like, you can't always get there. That's the whole point of depression. Bad depression is, it's just every waking moment is like you want it to end. But even in those moments, if it's possible, I mean, because this is the problem you can fall into. I think I've had terrible periods in my life where I just, you know, you enjoy your suffering, like your suffering is your story. And, you know, that's also not healthy and good. And you put that on other people and you got to pay attention to that. But if there's a way that you can take a deep fucking breath in tough times and good ones alike, and, you know, just say thank you for it. God damn, it's so fucking corny, but it's so true. Even, I don't know, I've been feeling weird. The mundane aspects of just like gratitude. They're like, no, things are definitely not perfect. Things are really bad in the world. Even Thanksgiving itself, like, is rooted in such terrible stuff. My mom was, I mean, just, you know, colonialism and this big lie that so much of the country and our education was built on, you know, just covering up this horrible genocide. Maybe that's a good Thanksgiving Day activity. John Leguizamo's History of the Latin World for Morons. I think it's called Latin History for Morons. It's on Netflix. It's really great. I think that's a good thing to maybe watch on Thanksgiving. But yeah, I'm very grateful for my family and for my friends, and that I'm still drawing breath and I get to watch this world and its strange, strange spiral, its strange ever growth. And I'm grateful for Jay for joining me on my podcast and getting out of his comfort zone probably a little bit, and being open talking to me about his experiences, because hopefully they'll speak to some of you out there and be helpful one way or another for feeling good about your life and feeling gratitude for the existence you get to have. Thank you all. I'm grateful for you. On with this wonderful conversation with my buddy, Jay. All right. Yes, now I'm recording. Hello. What's up, dude?
What's up, bro?
All right. Hi, everyone. My good bad brain, as usual. I'm here today with my buddy, Jay. What's your real name?
It's Jonathan. Yeah. I'm going to tell you why.
Yeah.
Jake, where Jay came from.
Yeah, go. Tell me.
So I was in fourth grade and we had like three Jonathans, right? So my teacher finally was like, I can't have this. So she started calling me JJ. And then from, is it Different Strokes? There was this guy who was like, Dynamite, right?
Oh, yeah,
like
yeah.
So, and then is all my friends.
His name's JJ in this show?
Yeah, it's actually JJ.
Dynamite.
Yeah.
I've heard that, and I just, it's weird because that's one of those like cultural sound bites that I don't really know where it's from. I just know I've like in my brain.
And then through middle school, people were just like, even that's too long. So it's Jay. And literally no one has ever called me Jonathan, because in the military, I was Hines, my last name.
Right.
My friends called me Jay. And then my family calls me Johnny. So like,
yeah,
Jonathan just kind of disappeared. So I've stuck with Jay for like the longest time.
That's Jay's. I feel like if you have a Jay name, that's just the instant. Like, it's such an easy, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm Jarrett. There's no like any, but like family, my sister called me JJ growing up my whole life. And they all just call me Jay, JJ. Yeah. Oh, that's weird. Anyway, so we know each other from jiu-jitsu.
Yes.
And which is, jiu-jitsu has always, I mean, I love combat sports in general. I think they're really good for everybody, but especially I think young men and men are like, because we just have some stuff in us that like has to, you know, it's got to come out.
It's like, got to go somewhere.
You have like thousands of years of like people who survived the ice age and shit in your blood. And you're like, there's some violent urges. It's like fun for us to a certain degree. And so I think you got to find healthy places to get it out. But also for me, martial arts for me were an interesting thing. And I'm interested to hear about your experience with martial arts too. Like when I was a teenager, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, very like white suburb, you know, like it's felt like even my experience in like blue states or like just urban areas are like they vote like, you know, open-minded and diverse, but like there's like real segregation, like you're still like very separated like by economic things. And like, you know, my school, it was like, it just like was like all the fort kids, actually, because there was an army nearby, the fort kids, like they'd all sit together, and like all the Hispanic kids would like sit together. And it was still like this very like, you know, it just didn't feel like there was a lot of like mixing of different kinds of people.
Right.
And when I started doing martial arts, I started, my first martial art was Wing Chun Kung Fu, and I would go to the city for it. I'd go like down, I'd take the train to the Loop in Chicago, and it was like, I kind of think that was like one of the probably the best like thing for widening my world that I did, because like there were all different kinds of people from all different walks of life, and we're trying to beat each other up and then shaking hands and like hanging out. And there's something about that for me in martial arts that like the crazy intimacy of trying to hurt each other, but the trust that like you're doing it to like make each other better, and because you want to have fun and like you want to like take care of each other. That became very profound, and also like makes humans more dimensional. I feel like people who don't maybe watch fight sports or aren't into it, like just see people beating each other up and don't get it. Yeah. Like, and because especially I think the UFC is taking this turn where it's like WWE and they like to like create hate or whatever, just like beef between each other. But the reality is, like for most people, you create like a weird bond.
Yes.
Anyway, what do you 100%. Think?
Yeah. Oh yeah, 100%. I saw the movies like Jean-Claude Van Damme, you know, and all that stuff. And who didn't want to do all that? So I've always been into martial arts. I was really into boxing for a very long time. Like boxing was my number one sport.
Yeah.
Until obviously I joined the army, and then we have a thing called combatives in there. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of like jiu-jitsu, but like they try to put weapons in there and stuff like that. And then, so my squad leader was a jiu-jitsu guy. So he liked jiu-jitsu. He would teach us a little bit of jiu-jitsu. And, so one time I was going with a little guy. I didn't know nothing about jiu-jitsu. Like, I wouldn't even watch. I've never seen the UFCs or nothing like that. Yeah. But I was looking at this guy. I was like, I'm gonna, you know, fuck this guy up.
Yeah.
But he actually knew jiu-jitsu before he even joined the army. So then we went at it, and I was like, oh, if he just fucked me up. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I gotta learn this.
Jiu-jitsu is magical like that. Like, it's you, because again, the Jean-Claude shit, like we all grow up, you know, so you do Taekwondo, you do like whatever the fuck. And it really like, you learn very quickly that all the bullshit's not true.
Yes.
Like you can't like, size and strength do matter. And you can't just, you know, and then you do jiu-jitsu, and like all of a sudden, like size, I think for me, jiu-jitsu was like size and strength do matter. And they were like, yes, it does matter. And we're not going to pretend like it doesn't. But also, you can do these things.
Yes.
And it was the first time that like, I mean, when I started jiu-jitsu, I was much smaller. And I think I was competing, like I would compete at like 147. And I could like, when I got okay at it, the first time I like armbarred someone legit who was like jacked 220. And I was like, fuck. I was like, this works. This is crazy. There's something about that that's like, I don't know. It's empowering and humbling at the same time, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So the army's where you like, well, actually when you boxed, I was just curious, did you box a long time? Did you like hard spar or compete or anything like that?
No, it was just, I would train at a gym and I just watched it a lot. I mean, my parents are Mexican, so that's like big in the Mexican community. Mm-hmm. I guess it's like because of Chavez and, you know, all the great boxers, La Hoya, all that stuff. So that's always been like the number one thing in boxing, so for Mexicans at least. And So yeah, I did that for a while, and then I never followed it. I just got into my own thing, and then
I was just thinking about boxing recently too, because like I was just thinking about concussions. Yeah. You know, but like I really like striking, and I've started doing a little bit of like we were just talking before we started, starting to do a little bit more of it just for the cardio. But like as we've learned, like how fucking bad brain trauma is for you. You know,
yes.
I think about like stuff I did when I was younger,
right?
Just for nothing. Like I wasn't gonna be a fighter. Like sparring sessions where you just like are knocking the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't think like every time you get a little channel change, you're like, that's a tiny concussion. Like,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think about that a lot. Like I was thinking about that related to other people in my life, my dad and stuff. Like that weird, just learning more and more that if you fucking rattle your brain around. And I think there's something kind of like almost nice about understanding that, because like with mental health problems and difficulties, you know, obviously boxing, there's like cognition stuff or whatever that happens when you're later, if you have too much head trauma, like just, you know, how well can you speak or think?
Yeah.
But also we're learning more and more emotional processing issues become really difficult. And a lot of like football players and boxers get like depression and things like that. And I think it's interesting to note that it is, like, I think still there's the stigma and feeling that mental or emotional processing issues are just are still predominantly like a choice, like are like a moral one, or like is your willpower strong enough?
Yeah.
Just da 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 da. And the more we understand about this like squishy fucking thing in our head, like you realize, oh well, that makes sense. Like if you let the air out of some tires and they'd flop around and stuff, you know, that like that something in the physical processing can be disrupted that has like that affects your sense of self, and you know, things that we don't associate with physical symptoms, like we tear our shoulders and we're like, oh yeah, my shoulders, like whatever. But like the idea that is becoming clearer and clearer that like you can also get punched in the head too hard or like whatever, and that can affect you. You can get like anxiety and and
like
fucking
a long lasting
suicidal, like
that you don't even see right away, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have any experience with do you associate anything like that with, you know, do you ever have like injuries or things like that that seem to?
No, I haven't had any. Like I've been very lucky for some reason. I've had very little to any injuries. I've never never had a broken bone or anything like that. I've been pretty lucky, I think. I feel
I mean, maybe that's a segue into like why I wanted to talk to you. Do you mind telling me? I don't want to say it. Do you want to say like why I about the why you're here and your experiences? Like you're a veteran,
yeah.
And it was Veterans Day recently,
yes.
And I wanted to, and I thought I've been wanting to do this for a while. We've talked about it for like months. I've been hey man, you want to talk on my podcast? Because you've been through something that a lot of people have, but a lot more people haven't, and I think it's very fucking interesting. And you have, I mean, I think probably a lot of people have trauma in their lives more than they think they do. And I think a lot of people are having post-traumatic stress symptoms in their life from those things, but you have a very unique experience with the military. And, what's a good question to start that off is like, have you been diagnosed with like PTSD? Do they say, give that phrase to what you?
Yes, I have gone to the VA and I was diagnosed with PTSD. Yeah.
What is that? I'm not asking this like, cause I have like a sense like of a stereotype of what I think PTSD might be, but like, what's your experience of like what you go through that made them say like, oh, well that's PTSD.
Well, you know, what's funny because people ask me all the time, what's the hardest part about the military? And I think, it's getting out, you know, because it's such a different, culture from being in the military and being out. So I got out in 2013. Yeah, I got in 2009 and I got out 2013. And when I got back, it's like a switch. It's a weird switch. You know, you're happy to be home, but it's still, you take time to integrate and back into normal. Cause you know, military people and civilians, I guess I'm air quoting, but they're very different. You know, it's very different for us to come back and just be normal, I guess you can say, you know. So I had trouble coming back, and I still have a little bit of trouble. It's getting better, but yeah, I think jujitsu helps me out a lot, and you know, I take CBD a little bit to help me. So, yeah, but
do you? Can you talk about the your work? Is that like what you do now?
Yeah, yeah,
okay, yeah, just making sure. Yeah. What? So, and with the, as a, I'm gonna come back to some of that, but with the CBD, you actually, I thought that was an interesting thing I wanted to talk to you about too, because you're in the weed business now.
Yes, yeah. I work for my friend who I met through jujitsu, which is crazy.
Bunch of fucking potheads. Yeah.
So I'll tell you how I got into it. So I was training there at a different gym, and he was a good friend of mine. And I would tell him all the time, you know, about I was out of the military, and you know, I had PTSD, and also with soreness with jujitsu and all that. And he told me to try CBD. Mm-hmm. I had never heard of CBD.
Yeah.
And when he told me about it, I was like, I was a little bit reluctant because I don't like smoking weed. Like, yeah, it's not my thing.
Oh, really?
You know, I get like super paranoid. Yeah, I don't actually smoke weed.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, just straight CBD. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So he told me about it, and I was like, I don't know, you know, I don't like getting high. But he told me, he's like, it's a non-psychoactive, you know, it's really good for you. It's like all the benefits of weed without getting high. Yeah. So I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll try it. And I tried it, and it worked very well for me. Let's put it that way. Yeah, it was
just
really good.
Just smoking it or like rubs or?
Well, first I was taking an oil. It's called the Rick Simpson oil. You know, I take an oil, you put it under my tongue, and you know, it goes into my kidneys or whatever, but
I had one like that. That was like, it was like 16-1. It was like mostly CBD and like a tiny bit of THC.
Those are the ones I like. It's 16-1. That's a really good.
Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah. It's like,
I found out too through him that you have to have a little bit of THC in it for it to like really work. Because you know, people sell CBD out in the stores now, but there's no THC because obviously they can't sell it with THC in it. So yeah, I was doing that, and that helped me out a lot. You know, I tell him all the time. I still tell him that helped me out a lot. With everything, you know, because CBD is like, it's like an antidepressant as well. All that good stuff, you know?
So. Yeah, I agree with you. When I was just having some injuries and stuff, I mean, I do like smoking weed a lot.
Yeah.
I like the thoughts it gives me. Like, it just makes me look at, I don't know, it makes me feel like, I just start thinking more abstractly, but it feels concrete. Yeah. And like, I think they're just, that's the best way I can describe it. Is I like the thoughts it gives me, is that it helps me observe my experience in a more objective or maybe just like distanced way. Like, it makes it safer to like look at reality and go and be like okay with how weird it is, like, and how strange three dimensions is and consciousness is and time is, and that all seems like those are all like illusory things that we just kind of invented to try to manage our sense of the world.
Yeah.
But that the ability, and I feel like if you think too hard about that stuff, the edges start to fray on reality and you can start to like fall apart. And there's something in weed that like just makes it okay. I remember the first time I got high, like a long time ago when I was like younger, I just said, and I wasn't really into it. I said it just felt like being like really stupid, but I'm okay with it.
Oh, okay.
And now it's become more different. It's become like I'm okay thinking about darker, scary ideas, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's made it, like, sometimes edible trips can get a little weird, like, if they can become, like the paranoia stuff and things can happen. But, like, I feel like now that I'm used to them, I actually like those ones because it feels like I can start to think about darker, scarier things. Like, the best way I can describe the weird anxiety that comes with it sometimes is like, have you heard of cosmic vertigo?
No.
They call it, that's this phrase for like when you look at the night sky and there's like billions of stars and you just start thinking about how infinite everything is.
Yeah.
You realize every star is like, and you get that feeling of like, like they call it cosmic vertigo.
Yeah.
I feel like weed does that sometimes. Like, if you too much, like you, but like now I like trying to navigate that cosmic vertigo. I don't know. But that, the CBD, when I was making some rubs with my brother, we were like, you do need a little THC to help it like fully absorb.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just thought that was interesting because you went from like military, which is like very, that stuff's not okay.
Yeah.
Federal level. And like, it's an interesting segue to me, especially when CBD and the other things like are considered so healing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It was crazy for me too. I mean, if you told me, I'd be getting out and then I'd be working in the marijuana business, I would have been like, oh, you're crazy, you know. Even I didn't think that I'd be doing that. But
do you find it now, like, do you meet other veterans working in that stuff?
Actually, it's surprising how much I didn't know, but it seems to be a lot of veterans that are, they I've heard of veterans using marijuana and it helps them a lot, you know? So I always think if it helps you, do it, you know?
Yeah.
For everyone. Everyone's different, so everyone's going to try their own thing.
Yeah.
So you got to find what you like. And
just, so backing up a little bit, because I'm going to get into that because I want to know about what did help you. But before getting to like what helped you, I'd love to know about like what challenges you were facing. Like, again, like what is when they say you have PTSD, like what is that like in your life?
Okay, so I went through like a 1 year really bad like depression, like real bad. Like
this is after coming back.
This is after coming back. Yeah. So
how long were you gone? How long were you over?
I was gone 4 years.
The whole 4 years was like, so you trained for 4 years and then.
So I did. Let's say I did 2 years in training Germany. I did. Then I did 1 year deployment in Afghanistan, and then I came back to Barstow, which is like right before Las Vegas. So I was stationed there. So I did four years.
What was your job? What was your?
I was infantry. So I was like,
It's hardcore. So you were there. So you were 2 years in Germany, and then you said like a year in Afghanistan.
1 year in Afghanistan,
And then a year in Barstow.
Yes.
And then what's it like? Like, what's the process of? I don't know. I feel like most of us, unless you have family or friends in the military, and even if you have friends, I think, and you don't really talk about, like, how is, what's the process of getting in, like how fast are you, like, swept from your regular life into, like, I'm in the Army now, and then...
It's like, right away, like,
boom. How did you wind up? How old were you when you joined?
So, yeah, so I tried to join when I was 17, right? I don't know, first, I'll tell you why I kind of joined. I'll tell you, there was two main reasons that happened for me why I joined was, first of all, I had a cousin, I was like 13 or something, who joined the Marines like right after the Iraq wars. And he came back. He was a Marine, I believe. Yeah. And everyone was just like so like proud of this guy. You know, he was like, but he was like completely different. Like he was like a troublemaker and like, you know, he wasn't like
before he
joined. And then like, he just did like a 180 and he's like a Marine and, you know, he was like very like on it. So I was like, oh man, that's pretty cool for him to do that, you know. So that was one of the reasons. I was like oh man, I kind of want to do that, you know. And the second reason was that I grew up right here in Echo Park, you know. So it wasn't the Echo Park you see now. It was it's very different. Way different. So
how old are you now?
I am 27, about to be 28 on Friday. So yeah, actually, like, it's my birthday. Thank you.
Which I'm like 10 15, I mean
pretty much 10 years ago.
10 years ago. And then, but growing up here would have been like 20 years.
Very different. Like I wasn't going to the park after 8 was not even like a question. Right. You just wouldn't go to the park after 8. Yeah, it was very bad. They found bodies like in the lake. And
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah.
Just when I came and started learning, because like, I grew up in Chicago, but when I moved out here about 10 years ago, but I was living in the Valley. But prior to that, like when you read 10 years before that, it was like way crazier.
Yeah.
And like there was the Rampart scandal and all the stuff in the 90s. And it was just corrupt.
This whole area was like pretty crazy. So, So I was doing real bad. You know, I just wasn't going to school. I was hanging out with bad people. And one of my friends got shot and he died.
Fuck.
He was in a gang. And he was like a good, it was weird because he was one of those people that, just he didn't belong in a gang. Like he was a good guy, he was a smart guy, but he was like, it was guilty, but he lived in that area, so like pretty much jumped him in. So he was in it. So we would talk sometimes, and he'd be like, "Man, you're too good for this. Like you should be hanging out, right?" This he would tell me that stuff, and then he died. I was like, "That's probably, you know, a good sign for me to be like, yeah, I shouldn't be doing this." So then I was like 17, and then that's when like the recruiter started coming around the schools. I was like, yeah, you know what? That seems like something I want to do, you know. But I couldn't. When you're 17, you can't join without a parent's signature, right? My mom was like, no fucking way. Like, she was very like anti-military, like, no, not at all. My son's not going to be none of that. So I had to wait till I was 18. I actually, the day after my 18th birthday, I went straight to the recruiter's office. And I was like, I got to join. So I joined at 18.
What was the joining like? Like, do you do that test? And I did it like one time. I went to like, I did this little mini test and it was like a whole silly thing.
Well, before they even like let you test, they do like a mini test to see if you can actually take the test, right? This is called the ASPAB, and then you take like a physical test, push-ups.
They put you in the hotel, right? For 2 days or whatever.
Yeah. So I did that and then, I did the physical and then boom, like.
Do you sign the contract before going to do the tests and stuff?
Do I remember? Yeah, I think I did. I was signing contracts and then they do the test.
And you were signing up for infantry from there too?
Right. Yeah. It was funny because I actually I didn't score that high, but I had a good score on my, it's called the ASVAB.
Yeah.
And my recruiter was like, you know, you don't have to do infantry. You can do like another job. You know, you don't have to be like, but I was like, I just felt like I'm not going to join the army and not, for some weird reason, that's what I was thinking.
I
was like,
I'm not going to. Yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah. So I was like, if no matter what I can job, I can get, just give me infantry. That's all I want. Just give me infantry. So I did that. I was like 18 years old. And then I took off to Georgia, which is where Fort Benning, where they have the infantry school. You know, so I was over there. It was like hot. I've never felt anything like that. It was
really?
Crazy. Yeah, it was because over there it's humid. It's not like dry heat here. So,
right.
You know, I've only had dry heat in my whole life. So, yeah, that was crazy. I did infantry school, and then I got stationed in Germany, which at first I hated. I was like, oh man, I'm gonna be so far away from home. But then I got to Germany, and man, Germany is amazing.
Really?
So yeah, I was there for like 2 years, and it was because we had weekends off, and you could drink at 18 over there.
Right.
You know, I was still 18, so I was like, oh, I'm not gonna be able to go out because I'm 18. But over there, it's like that's fine. You go ahead, buddy. So yeah, and then 2 years after that, I deployed to Afghanistan. I was in Zabul. It was like southeast, close to the Pakistan border.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then I did 1 year over there. I came back. Then I wanted to be close to home, so I got stationed in Barstow for my last year, and then that was it. Barstow is different. It's a training unit. We're not training ourselves to deploy. We're training other people to deploy.
Gotcha.
So they come in, we train them, and then they go and deploy. Yeah. So we don't actually deploy there. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's what I was just curious about, because I was like,
because it's huge. It's really huge. It's like, you know, you've seen when you pass it. It's all desert. So.
Yeah, I was like, because that's interesting to me. How like careers in the army work, because like people, you know, people think about like the conflict zones, but like there's the base Germany, and like there's bases everywhere.
Oh,
there's so much work and stuff that they do. What did you do in Germany when you were stationed there?
We're pretty much training to deploy.
Got it.
So
it's like more training after training. It's like
pretty much just keeping sharp. Pretty much.
Yeah. What's I'm just curious. So right off the bat, it's interesting to me, like. It's not like you were a stranger to fucked up shit before joining the army. You know, like your friend died when you were a kid.
Yeah.
How did that, like, do you ever think like, I don't know, like how did that affect you, and how did that affect, I don't know. I feel like as we get older, we get better at reflecting on our experience
Being
like, and like now I think I'm a place where like, if something fucked up happened to a friend or to me or whatever, if it was just they might have an instinct to go like, well, I don't know, whatever, I'm just going on.
Yeah.
But like I've noticed now, this is very dark. This is a very dark turn or whatever, but I just, thing has been stuck in my head. The Thousand Oaks shooting like a week ago.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago. Horrible, horrible thing. The guy made Instagram posts while doing it. And one of the things he said was like, people are going to give a lot of reasons why I did this. The truth is there's no reason. I was just bored. So he said life is boring. So I just thought, fuck it.
Wow.
And he was a Marine, and a former Marine.
I saw that.
You know, PTSD stuff, I think. I believe he was, it said in the thing. And when he said that, I was freaked out, like listening to it, because I was like, I've said stuff like that about my life. I've been like, life's boring. I don't know. Life just feels really boring. That's why I like to like get drunk. And that's why I like to like just do other compulsive things and disappear in them. I was like, I don't know. Regular life's just boring. And, as I did more processing and stuff of like my life and whatever, and everybody has their own traumas, like, you know, whatever the fucking thing is that's making you block up in your, because I think it happens to us when we're kids. Like, I don't think it even has to be like some big, like, it just has to scare you enough and be like unsecure enough when you're young, when you're like a kid that you go like, whoa, I'm gonna lock down on that shit, and you start to like have trauma response stuff in your life. But I realized later that like, when I would say that feeling of boring was really like because of like a numbness that I had like had to create for myself, because I had so much anger and like fear or pain or whatever, that like you just numb it, and then you go like, no, I don't know, I'm fine. Like things would happen that people would be like, are you okay? Or things like, how's that going for you? And I'd always just be like, no, I don't know. What do you mean?
Yeah.
You know? So I'm just curious, like when you're a kid, like, you know, teenager, I don't know, like, did you have any, like, what was your family like? What was your culture like your like a community like that, where you would be like, did you guys reflect on that stuff? And did you think like, whoa, this is something fucked up that I should talk to someone about or think about? You know what I mean? Or was it kind of just like, this is life and we just got to keep going?
Yeah. So my family is all Mexican. So that's like, people don't really talk about, you know, stuff, you know, it's kind of like you said, it's just, oh, this is life and we just deal with it. And I actually had like a crazy upbringing because I grew up, my family's from Sinaloa, and that's like one of the worst places for the cartel. And I lived in, it's called Los Mochis, Sinaloa. I lived there for 2 years, right? Because my mom took us back for a while because she was just tired of being here. And then I lived in Juarez. I don't know if you heard of Juarez.
Yeah, that's
but
like the really, really
that's
bad
really, one. So like I've lived in like some of the most horrible places. Dude. Like, and while I was
How
there,
old
in,
were you?
I was 13 when I was in Juarez, and I was like 7 or 8 when I was in Sinaloa.
Damn.
When I was in Juarez, like they were finding women decapitated.
Yeah.
Like, on the streets, you know, it was real bad back over there. I wouldn't even be able to go to the store and get, like, by myself at least, you know.
Right.
It was real bad. So it's just, I've lived, and then I lived in Echo Park, and then I went to Afghanistan. So it's like, it's just,
it's been
a crazy ride for me. Yeah.
Why do you think, do you ever think, like, I don't know, I'm a maniac. I really like believe in sometimes like weirder fate and stuff like that. Like my brother and I have very similar lives, but for some reason death has touched his a lot more, you know, like best friends when he's like in fourth grade who dies, and like you know, my grandfather, he like sat with him while he died, and my grandma, like he's just been around death a lot more, and I'm like, it's weird because we are in the same house, but like for some reason it was just right. in his life over and over again. Like even when he was born, he almost died when he was born, like he had like a heart thing, you know, they had to like do surgery like 2 days into being alive. So I don't know, sometimes I'm like, what do you think this thing that touches your life early, this like violence and this like difficult situations, like do you feel like there's any sort of higher thing at work, like that this is a theme, a thing that you encounter, these difficulties, or do you feel better equipped to it, or do you feel less equipped because it was harder, you know what I mean?
Yeah, now I think that, now that you know, I reflect on it too, because I was like, that's some crazy stuff for me to live all these places.
Crazy.
Like most of those places are like, were named like the most dangerous places in the world.
Still,
you know?
Yeah.
So I always thought, I was like, I think that's why I'm so much nicer to people. You know, I always try to be nice because like, I know there's some fucked up shit going on all over the world. I've seen it. You know, some people tell you, oh yeah, I heard about, but I've actually seen it. You know, I've been in Mexico over there, and I've been in Afghanistan, and I've been here. So I've seen, but I've also seen the good. Like the real good, like
in these places,
like anyone, in, you know, anyone just helping each other out, you know, and so always try to be good
to
people.
Do you feel like, I'm not trying to lead a question here because I don't know what the answer to this is. Like, do you think it's like these bad places? Like, do you think it is most people are good and trying to help each other, and there's still like, there's just a few people that like, you know, make it fucked up. Like it only takes one act of violence or one asshole to like really fuck things up.
That is true. Yeah. Just like the whole thing with the shooting with the 1,000 Oaks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But I do believe there's more good than bad. At least I want to believe that. Right.
I mean, I saw you posting some pictures on your Instagram the other day, and like with you, with kids and people who are like there, and you are like, that seems to me like that's the horror of everything is like, there are really good just normal people everywhere, then that like it's so easy for people who don't see it to like just generalize, like oh, that's just a shithole, that everyone there is like fucked up or whatever.
No, definitely we had a lot of good people we met over there. Of course there were some bad too, but almost a lot of the people that were there actually like didn't like the Taliban, you know. They were happy we're there because they're like gangsters here, you know. They just terrorize them, and they were happy that we were there helping. Because some kids, one time we had to help kids like go to school, like walk to school, because the Taliban would just, if they were seen with us, they were just shot or whatever.
That's like, I mean, that's like that girl Malala.
Yes.
She's like shot in the face for like trying to go to school,
that's
right?
That's so crazy, yeah.
Yeah, that's horrifying. I mean, man, there's so much. I'm so curious about this. I don't know. It's fascinating because for a lot of people joining the army who haven't grown up around tough, like scary shit like that, like it would be a huge risk, you know?
Yeah.
Like it would be like a feeling of like, am I going to give up my normal, like civilian, like civilized,
right.
just, you know, everything's fine. Like I'm going to go join the army, you know? And, or that's why they do it, because there's like this romance associated with it. I'm going to be a fucking soldier.
Yeah.
It's going to be like, you know, but for you, it's like that was stuff in your life a lot already, you know?
Plus, a lot of it had to do, I kind of really believed in what we were doing over there, you know?
Yeah.
Because I was sold on the idea that we're helping them, you know?
Yeah, well, can you tell me more about that? Because we're close in age. You're younger than me by, yeah. I think, 5 or 6 years. Yeah. But that stuff, I don't know, I struggled with my thoughts about, it just feels like as a young man, you feel like you're supposed to do that. Like you're supposed to go to the army, you know, like on some level, like culturally, all the stories you learn, yeah. all, like King Arthur and all the legends yeah. and all the shit is like, you're like, I'm supposed to go be in a war. And yeah. this is a war that's going on. And I don't know. I'm just curious about like, yeah, how was your belief before going in? How does it feel now? Like, yeah, tell me more about that.
Well, it was weird because, you know, I didn't feel like I had to go. I feel like it was me. Like for some reason, I just felt like, yeah, this is made for me. Like I'm supposed to do this. I felt, like that was my calling or something. But yeah, I just kind of thought I would always end up doing it. And I did, you know,
as I said. How was it? Like not in the obvious, like fucked up bad things happened, but like you helped those people and you were in it for 4 years. Yeah. So I'm sure like you're close with people and stuff. Like, was it fun? Was it good? Like, was it like?
Deployments are different for everybody, but I feel like you experience every single emotion. Like, you're gonna be sad, you're gonna be happy, you're gonna get mad. You know, you experience every single emotion over there. And the best way I've described it, I've tried to describe to people, it's like that scene in The Matrix where like he asks them, "Do you want the red pill or the blue pill?" And then once you take, you know, what was it, the blue pill or the red pill, whichever, right? You're like, yeah. "Fuck, I probably should have not done this."
Red pill. Yeah. Do you feel like, fuck, I shouldn't have done this?
I feel like I was a little too young. It's something, even through all the stuff I have seen, still, it's like, it seems to be like an older man's job. You know, 18 years old and you're over there and you're just worried about if your fucking truck is going to blow up or something, or today's the last day or whatever, you know, you're just constantly fucking on high alert pretty much, you know? So, and then you're there for a year. So it's not like you just go home and you're like, oh, let me lay down and rest. When you get back, like your friends are out there. So you got to be waiting, like you got to be up and waiting to see if they're getting shot so you can go help them. So you're never really, there's no month. I even threw my watch away. I had a watch for like the first 3 weeks. I was like, it feels like there's no time here. There's no days. There's no nothing. It's just every day is a Monday. That's what it feels like. Yeah.
That's wild, man.
Yeah. But I'm still glad I did it though. You know, it's like, still, I'm glad I did it, but.
So you say like that thing you said that you couldn't turn it off. Like you said, it was like, you can't just come back.
Exactly. And especially when you get back, you're still on like high alert. Like everything's, you're like looking at windows, you know, all that stuff. You know, it's hard to turn off.
You know? Stress though.
Yeah.
Do you still feel that way?
Always. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. But that's why I think jiu-jitsu helps me out a lot with that. You know, it kind of quiets the mind pretty much. You know, that's what they say, right?
For sure. Yeah. That's like definitely, I think, why I realize, like I've done it on and off for like 12 or 13 years, like way too long to, you know, be where I'm at with it. Yeah. But it really is like a personal journey. Like I just notice whenever my mind gets too loud and things get fucked up, and I always end up back. In the past, now I know. Now I'm like, okay, I got to just keep doing this forever because it's, you know, and I'm not like super consistent, but it's like, you just, if you go like once a week or even every once in a bit. Now I've talked to friends about it, we just say, we're like, I'm always doing jiu-jitsu. Like even when I'm not training, I'm like, there's a mindset and like a thought about like problems have solutions.
Oh yeah, 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 I definitely
can master my mind in these scary situations. That is like definitely lasting.
Yeah.
So when you come back, like how long was it before you started? Like, why did you end up, how did you get someone at the VA to say, oh, you have PTSD? Like, did you wait a while before going to see people, or were they like?
Yeah, I actually didn't even go right. I'm still under the process of that, but I actually didn't go right away because I just, you know, same, when you get out, you're just like, you don't, like, it's not something you want to tell people. It's not something you want to have really, you know, it's because it's just so frowned upon. Maybe even back then, maybe it's a little bit more accepting now, but before it was like, oh, he's just crazy veteran, you know, this fucked up. He's like, people always say crazy, you know. So I was like, you know, sometimes I don't even tell people that I was in the military. I'm just, no, like, that's not even some people I tell. Not because I'm not proud of it, because, you know, they'll try to get into it. So I was like, oh, okay.
They want to be like, oh, what happened?
Yeah.
Tell me about stories and shit.
Yeah.
That, well, because you're also saying, you're saying this thing about other, like, oh, you're a crazy veteran. Like, yeah. Can you say more about, like, what does that mean? Like,
that's you know, something that got me mad was the whole shooting thing, because the first thing they popped up was like, oh, this guy had PTSD. And, you know, he probably did, and it's probably was a factor, but it's, you know, veterans are like, I've met veterans that's the last thing they want to do is hurt other people, you know? Right. They're selfless. That's the best way to explain a veteran to me. You know, every veteran, they went up to sign up, and you know, for most people, they believe that it's to help their country, you know, to people they haven't even met before, you know. So that's what I thought too, you know, of course. But that's the last, and I saw that, I was like, PTSD, I was like, ah, that's like, of course they're gonna say that, you know. Could have been a lot of things, you know.
Do you feel like, now that you're done with it and stuff, do you feel like, how do you feel about that original feeling that, like, I'm going to help people and this is going to be a good thing?
I still believe in it, you know, yeah. because of what I saw, you know, what we did. We did help a lot of some people didn't even have water over there, which is crazy. They had to walk to, so we made wells. We made a couple of, like, water wells,
yeah.
You know, for them to have water. Because some people would have to, like, walk for, like, hours just to get water and bring it back.
Yeah.
Know? So it was, did a lot of good over there. So I still fully believe in it, you know. And if they asked me to go back, I'd go back.
Yeah, yeah. I think what you said, I think the reason, it's tough. I think, like, in the news cycle, part of it is that, like, it just becomes the expected. We got to say this and this stuff.
Yeah.
I think the hopefully positive version of it is that, like, we notice this pattern and go, like, because I think what you're saying is right. I think a lot of people who have these kind of things, like, don't have a violent, they don't want to hurt anybody.
Right.
But knowing that suicide rates are so much higher and exactly. So fucked up,
yeah.
That, like, that's somebody they're hurting, even if it's just themselves. And this, hopefully that by saying in the news and noting this thing, like, the shooter was a former military and
yeah. PTSD,
that we start to just, like, keep paying attention to. See, I think the problem is people do just go, like, oh, crazy, stigmatize it.
Yeah.
Instead of going, like, wait, there's a pattern here.
Right.
We should, like,
yeah,
care about this.
Yeah.
And, like, what you said about the young men thing is, I think, very true. I mean, I think you realize, like, very cynically as you get older and realize, like, how the world works, and you're like, all the presidents and all the fucking presidents who are not ex-military and businessmen and
yeah.
you know, whatever, and yeah. even generals and shit, whatever, they're all old men.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're starting to feel this way now when you meet 18, 17, 20 year olds. I think there's nothing I went to my brother was at college, and I went and visited when he graduated, and I went to, like, a frat party.
Yeah.
And it's just like all these young men who are, like, drunk and, like, 20 or 21. Right. And I was like, this is the scariest place in the world.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, I'm, like, 30 or something at the time. And when they shake my hand, they're just crushing my hand.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
you can just feel yeah. like these young men who are, like,
yeah.
so intense all the yeah. time. And, like, are, like, want to test it and want to, like, you know. And you're just like, fuck, the level of, like, just... It's like a giant dog. It's like
right,
it's like being around an excitable, like a puppy that doesn't know he's a 100
like a missile
pound.
With no direction yet. Right?
Yeah, and you're just like, you don't know if they're like, because Bodhi, like our dog, is like this big dumb German Shepherd Husky mix, and when he's a puppy, like, I think sometimes he just gets in a feedback loop, and then he's growling, and suddenly it's really crazy. And I feel like young men feel that way. Like, there's a thing to them, especially when they're in a group, that if they don't have tools to discuss their feelings right. or appropriate boundaries that they're taught early on or anything like that, or appropriate outlets for all our, like, fuck stuff, break stuff instincts, you yeah. know, that, like, it becomes a really... And also, if you're a cynical leader of people, like, you can get them to do crazy
right.
shit.
Yeah.
And so you're like, well, that seems like the best. Those are the people that we should sign up for army stuff. Because,
yeah.
you know, like when you're 25, 26, 27, you start to go like, I don't know if that's a great idea.
Yeah.
You know, like when somebody tells you yeah. to do something. I don't know. That yeah. Like, I don't know. What do you think about that? Like how old were like your training officers and commanding officers and stuff when you were doing it?
I was actually, that's funny you mentioned that, because I was actually one of the youngest guys in my whole platoon. That's why I said it seems yeah. like a older man's job, because most of the guys I was with were pretty much older, you know.
Yeah, like we're talking like
25s, 30s,
wow,
even
okay.
like older
wow.
guys with like full families and everything. I'm like this young 18 year old, you know, just nothing, you know.
Yeah,
but yes, we do have a couple of young guys, but I was one of the youngest in my whole platoon. I was the second youngest. There was another guy who just beat me by a couple of months, but most of them are pretty much older. From that's why I feel like I'm 27, but I feel like I'm like fucking 37.
Yeah. Like, well, did it feel so, like, you, that's 4 years, right? You're 4 years in this thing. And I mean, how did it, like, not even the stuff people think about, like, just like war zone stuff, like, how does training affect your sense of self, or, like, you know, your mental state?
I think training is it's a good thing, because you get tested so much. Like, you do things that you thought would like you couldn't do. Like, you go days without, like, sleep or food, you know, and you just, I've never seen someone actually stand and be sleeping until I joined the military. Yeah. I didn't even think that was a possible thing, but like a walking zombie pretty much. Cause you're so tired, you know, they try to feed you as little as possible, overtrain. I like that whole thing where, like, let's make training harder than what it's probably going to be, you know, because that's always a good thing, I think.
You
know?
Totally. For you, it became a very, it was inspiring. It was like you found strength you didn't know you had.
Right. It was a lot of discipline. I was probably the most undisciplined person.
Does that stick with you, the discipline stuff?
I hope so. You know,
I'm just being like, because I'm bad at that shit. I mean, like, I don't know. I messy room all the time and shit and whatever. But, like, I don't know. I feel like I'm finally starting to figure out ways to, like, stabilize my life a little.
It does. Yeah. I think the whole making the bed thing was one of the big ones. And the late thing. I used to always be late. Time was nothing to me, right?
Yeah,
it's just whatever. But now it's like, they used to always tell us, like, if you're on time, you're late. You always got to be there like 30 minutes before.
Illustrated this morning when I'm like, you're fucking here, and I'm like, I'm getting batteries. I'll be right there.
But it doesn't bother me if someone else is late, but I feel like such a shitbag if I'm late, you know? Like,
yeah.
I don't like if anyone else is late, whatever, you know? I understand. But when I'm late, I feel like a horrible person, you know? That's just me. I think but that's from the military.
Well, so when you start, like, what did you start experiencing that led you to, cause like, that's what I was going to ask is, like, do you still use that, like, that knowledge of, like, in training you were able to, or, and even in, I'm sure then in actual military, like, deployment, but, like, knowing, cause for jiu-jitsu is like that, right? Like, knowing that I got out of certain things of jiu-jitsu, I have abilities of jiu-jitsu, like, helps me in other parts of my life. Like, do you draw on that? Like, well, I got through that thing, so I know I can get through this thing, you know?
Yes. Both things, jiu-jitsu and the military. I always use that, cause I was like, man, if you can get through that, then there's very few things that you can't get through, right? Because sometimes jiu-jitsu is rough as fuck. Yeah. Like, there's some days where I'm just like, shit, I'll go home and I'll just stare at the wall for like half an hour and like, what just happened, you know?
Was there any moment ever in the military that you got through that you were like, that you think about still as like a moment of like, I did that, I can get through this, you know, or like in training or anything?
You know, yeah, but then the military will always find a way to beat that, you know? You think, oh, give fuck. You
something more fucked up.
Something more fucked up. You're like, ah, oh, fuck, I can't believe I did that. And then like a week, maybe in the next day, you're like, oh, fuck, we just did something else. So it's always like, plus you don't get time to like, they just keep you always going, you know? So like, you don't get time for anything, like to even think about stuff. So you just constant.
Is that like, that's like just giving you tasks constantly to
do? Yeah, that's probably, I feel like that's planned probably, you know?
It's gotta be,
right?
Cause as soon as you said that, I was like, of course. Cause like time to reflect is gonna be useful.
Yeah, that's even still to this day, like I heard this saying, it's like, idle time is a devil's playground or something like that. Uh-huh. Like if you just don't
idle
do nothing,
the devil's playground.
Right. But see, if you just don't do nothing, like you just, you know, your mind starts going crazy. Right?
Dude, that's so interesting. Cause I think about that a lot. Like this is a subject that I talked to my mom about recently, was it's this weird thing of like, sometimes, you have having space is you just spin and you start like navel gazing and it can get like, you can lose track of like reality,
right?
It can get dark, but at the same time, that's the space that you need. Like you need to create a certain kind of space and time to think about and consider and process things to like be healthy. Like again, like I really do think certain things, if you don't work them out, they just fester and they'll start to like come out in other ways.
Yeah,
and they'll be like,
100%.
And you start to be like, you better fucking pay attention to me
or
else I'll keep getting more destructive.
Yeah.
And so it is weird to think like until you're offered tools, maybe to emotionally work through things, that time of space is like not useful. And also I wonder if it's like, just cause you're in a situation where like if I make some big breakthrough in therapy or something like that, and I'm fucking crying and I'm like, oh, whatever, and things like that, it would probably be a really bad time that they'd be like, everybody fucking stand to or whatever. Yeah. There's somebody attacking, you know?
Yeah.
Probably a really bad moment. And it probably has to do with that too, that like you just don't, they can't make space for that in the situation. You have to wait till it's over to like, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that thing you said about throwing your watch away is like really fascinating, and it's very poetic, actually, too. It like almost sounds like a movie moment or something.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but that symbol of just like even tracking the time is not serving me here.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little more about that?
I it was just for me. I don't know if everyone else did it, but it's like you're in a different dimension even, you know? It just feels like you're so secluded from everything that's over here, you know, and you're just like in a whole different place, and the only people you have is your friends, you know? So that's all. It's not like you can go to the store or go home or like, oh, what time is 9 o'clock, it's for my favorite show, or you know, whatever.
Yeah,
you know, it's just every day you just keep going, you know? Yeah. You're just constantly going, so it's like no time to really pay attention.
So did the PTSD stuff start happening while you were still like, while you were in Barstow, or was it not till like you started worrying about it after being out?
It really started kicking in because I got out almost right after my deployment, because I came back to I re-enlisted while I was in Afghanistan, and then I got back to Barstow and finished the rest of it, and it was like quick, boom, I'm out, I'm back in, you know, I'm back
with
here.
The Barstow stuff?
Yeah, after the Barstow.
Oh, after, you know, Barstow.
I was in Barstow for like, I wasn't even there for like a year, I think.
You know? Not even a year.
No, yeah. This was fresh from deployment.
You went from deployment right back to Barstow, basically?
So I just had to like, you had to go back to your original place, which was Germany. I stayed there for like a month, out processing, getting my stuff ready, and then boom, straight to Barstow. Yeah. I was one of the few that did that. Everyone else just kind of stayed over there. But I wanted to be close to home. I just miss home. Yeah.
So then you're Barstow for less than a year.
Probably less than a year.
And then what made you choose to be like, I know, how long was it from like, I'm done with the army, or you know what I mean? Or like, did they go, okay, you're done with the army?
No, they actually tried to get me to reenlist again and tried to get me to go to Hawaii. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, no, I knew, it was like, I did my time, you know, I did everything I could. So I think it's time for me to just be home, you know?
Yeah.
With my family or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, enjoy it. Like, cause something I'm jealous of, like you said, you saw the 18 year olds at college. I do get jealous of that sometimes, because I feel like I missed out on like a lot, you know, because I was at 19, I was a combat veteran before I can have a beer, you know, before I can. And people tell me, no, trust me, you were better off. But then there's part of me that I was like, man, I wish I like could go out when I was like in college and get drunk and, you know, do all that stuff that like,
do you feel like you do that stuff now? Do you make up for lost time?
No, not really. I try every once in a while, you know, I try, but I still feel like I was like, you know?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I didn't go to college or anything like that. Totally different. Yeah. Totally just different reasons. I wasn't fucking in a war, you know, but like,
but not just even going to college. I mean, just like, just living life as an 18, 19 year old.
Well, I think that's the thing, that maybe it might be one of the sources of, maybe the source of like traumas for people is like having to grow up too fast.
Yeah.
Is like before, you know, my family's just falling apart. My dad was like falling apart, and I would like drive my little brothers to AYSO and cook up. You know, you start being a parent like when you're young.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that is like, maybe that's the source of it. What did something ask, like you were asked to grow up very early.
Yeah.
Like even if you had family taking care of moms and stuff like that, like even if it wasn't sibling stuff, it was like you had to deal with very adult things very early, just by
very
exposure to
early.
Violence.
Yeah, I actually, there's this crazy story from Echo Park. I was like 8, 9 years old, and then there was this little girl missing. So like it was dark back then, there was no real lights in Echo Park. So we, like, the whole neighborhood went out looking for her for like with flashlights.
Yeah,
that's what I was like, oh, this is probably not normal. You know, this is, I'm like 9 years old, 8 years old, whatever, looking for a little girl who got kidnapped in Echo Park with like flashlights.
Yeah,
like,
my
mom took us out. Yeah. So I feel like I've been exposed. So I always thought, like, then the army's just like a,
did anybody find her?
They did find her. Yeah. Oh, they brought her back.
That happy ending.
Yeah.
I'm glad
definitely.
We got it.
Yeah. So.
And then, so what were you saying? The army, you felt like?
It felt like it was just a natural thing. Like, this is supposed to happen. You know?
Dude, that's interesting. I don't know. I think everybody like laments the life that they didn't have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's true. Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe I think that's also our struggle, is like to meet
Yeah, because then I meet people the opposite. They're like, man, I wish I would have joined. You know, I just stayed here. There's people, I have that, people tell me all the time, you know, like, oh, I wish I would have joined. Then I'm like,
How do you feel about that? Like people who go like, oh, well, I thought about it, man.
I get that. Like veterans get that. Like if I had a dollar for like every time I get that, I'd be a millionaire, you know?
Well, yeah. Cause I feel like, I mean, like I have an instinct to do it. You're like, well, cause I think every man does think about it.
Yeah.
That's so, but how do you feel about that? Or what's your response to that?
I'm
or?
Just like, well, now I've get it so much, you know, that it's just like, I believe you, you know? I believe you because I was the same way, except I signed the contract, you know? So
yeah,
I probably would have been the same way if I didn't join. I would have been like, man, I wish I would have joined.
Do you feel a separation from like civilians and people who serve?
I do. Yeah.
It's, what's that about? What's that like?
No, it's so weird because the best way to explain it is, as I was talking to my friend about this, it's like it's hard to feel safe with civilians because with veterans, you know, they've proven it to you that they will put their life on for you, right? They love you. Like you'd rather you get hurt than your friends or anyone else get hurt. You know, you'd rather that. Everyone else rather that, you know? So you know with them is like, for sure, if something happens, I don't even have to question what you're going to do. I know you're going to be there for me. And it's actually happened in the civilian world where a veteran and a friend that I had from high school, you know, something happened, and let's just say the veteran was way more there for me than a friend who I have known for years, right? Yeah. And a guy I just met like 3 months ago, maybe in the army, right? So you always feel like they'll be there for you, no matter what. Like it's not even a question. It's always been like, and that's what I think. That's why people miss the military so much. It's not like all the crazy stuff. It's like real, real family that you care about. You know?
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you say that because, like, phrasing even, like, that it's hard to feel safe with civilians. I think a lot of the stereotypes are like you're saying, like, for civilians are like, I think there's something scary inherently to the herd of, like, the people who have been close to darkness.
Yeah.
Like, not even, you know what I mean? Like, even if you didn't do anything violent or whatever, but like just the fact that you were close to it, it's like the herd that's like hasn't been by the scary thing is like, right, we should worry about that things, you know. And and that's interesting to hear. Like, I don't know, I used to have this joke about like dudes and like that that I would say I couldn't trust anyone if I was able to, I would say like, I couldn't trust someone I was able to capture, kill, and begin eating within 5 minutes.
That's pretty like, funny. Yeah.
That I like if that. They can't run or fight or something a little bit, that there is some part of you that, like in a primal, like pack mentality way, is like, well, you're suspect because like you're going to be a liability, or since you can't necessarily face problems in a survival sense this way, you might worm out. And like, and it's a silly, crazy mindset, but it's like, I don't know, for me in martial arts, it was like that feeling of like, well, people who we'd beat each other up, I trusted them, you know, more, and I felt closer to them than normal people who are just like,
yeah, because you know, you've seen them battle tested, right? You know what they're about. You know what, you know, what happens when the tough gets going. You know?
I think it's reassuring to know there are people who, if things get fucked up or like go into places that like humans aren't supposed to go, like impolite. Like a lot of people, like we're in such a nice polite society. That's like that bystander effect. Right. It's like when something bad happens around you, you kind of like can't believe it's happening. And you just spend so much time wait, this isn't really happening, right? This isn't really, I don't think this is. That by the time the moment's over, like the person's been mugged or bullied or whatever.
That's so crazy because I've actually had like three things have happened like this past 6 months where the whole bystander thing happens here, and it drives me crazy because people just don't do anything. They just watch and like I had to step up those three times where like one time there was this crazy man at Starbucks and, you know, just walking in and he was talking crazy to one of the nice lady, just barista girl. And he's like, I'm going to slap you, bitch. You know, I was like, and no one did anything. And I had to get up and tell him to get out. You know, I was like, get out. Don't talk to her like that. Get out. And no one did anything. That was the craziest part for me. And then two other times, it's the exact same thing. And it's just people just, they'll take their phone out, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just crazy. It's like, this girl's a like nice worker just doing her job. And you got this crazy man coming in telling her he's going to hit her. And then he walked up to her. That's when I got up.
Yeah.
You know, because people yell shit all the time, but he started walking towards her. Yeah. So I got up and I told him, to get the fuck out.
I feel like there's a lesson in that, that like people, I think people, it's easy for people to feel broken by their traumas, you know?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, you have a different, very specific, very extreme, you know, experiences of violence and stuff. One of the things that my mom's violence program that these prisoners would say, and there's so many different kinds of violence, though. Like, there's emotional and physical, and there's economic, like taking and, you know, from people, and spiritual. Like, there's all these different ways that you can be violent. And for human organisms, even just being a child, like a baby around people who are screaming at each other and like really mean it, like your parents, yeah. like really, like that can fuck you up, like when right. you're really young. And I think it's maybe an empowering idea to think that, like, truly the trauma that, yes, it's gonna fuck with you a little bit and there's gonna be some things you have to deal with and it's not fun,
yeah,
but also it has prepared you that, like, when scary things happen now, you don't have to be unused to it and frozen by this confusing situation,
right,
that all the other bystanders are just like, so like, what do we, I don't even know what to, because their body's so overwhelmed just right. facing something traumatic,
yeah,
that, like, by going through traumas, there is a part of you that at least, like, you can be seen as a strength, I think, that yeah. you have some familiarity right. with that, like, emotional space.
Like, you have a calm in the storm, pretty much.
Yeah. yeah. That you yeah. won't be controlled and overwhelmed by yeah. those scary situations.
Yeah.
That it can actually be, we can carry the difficulties we've been through as proof that we could do it again.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that's kind of nice. That's kind yeah. of like a beautiful. Let me move into my, just gotta get you out of here, I think. I'll do these six quick cue section, but that'll also help. Yeah, we'll go quick. The first question is always like, have you been diagnosed with anything specific? And like, what did they call it?
So they call it PTSD. Yeah.
Yeah.
At the VA, yeah.
And what were like the symptoms of that and stuff? How so does it?
It's a lot of things. It's bipolar. There's depression. There's, yeah, I think those were the main two ones.
For anxiety. You, what were you experiencing that led
almost
you
almost all of them. Yeah. So yeah. I had like anxiety. I had depression. I had bipolar. I was like, one day I was happy. One day I was just completely miserable. I went through like a whole 1 year of like just straight depression where I didn't even want to get up anymore. Like, literally, I would just wake up. Look up and be like, yeah, I don't even think I want to wake up today. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so,
was it a friend or family member that was like, hey, this doesn't seem like you? Or did you just get like, what made you end up? Because that alone is so fucking hard to get people from the place of like, they're experiencing something, especially when it's depression. Because yeah. that is my experience also, that feeling of just like, it is impossible to leave the bed. Like, right. I can't explain.
Yeah. You want to.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You definitely want to.
That's, I think, the hardest thing to make people understand.
Yeah. It's not like I want to be on my bed. Just, yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't want to be there, you know?
It's very, it's actually weirdly, like, we're talking about our rotator cuff problems yeah. and the strangeness of the first time I actually tore something being like, it's not even pain. It's like, I can't.
Yeah.
Like, you're exactly. trying.
Yes. That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
And it is so frustrating to be like, your loved ones, your friends, people you work with, to be like, I really want to yeah. be functioning.
Imagine if someone just said, just lift your arm. That's all you got to do. Like, what are you
yeah.
doing, right?
Like, I don't know what to tell you. The tendons.
I want to. Trust me, I want to. But you yeah. just can't, right?
So that alone is like a big hurdle to cross to just right. go try to get some help.
Yeah.
So how did you do that? Or what led you to that situation?
To get help?
Yeah.
It took a lot of time. And it had to the point where I didn't want to believe it, I think, you know, that the whole time I was kind of in denial. I was like, no, this is normal. This happens to everybody. But then finally I was just like, yeah, this is probably not normal for me to just want to be in bed all day, you know, mm-hmm. not do nothing, not get up.
We're talking like years, months, like that.
This was like a whole year probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was what prompted you. You ended up at the VA.
I ended up at the VA. Yeah. And then I've been taking I always try to like read or watch, and I take little things from different people, you know. I take, like, I steal their ideas pretty much. Like, if someone says go for a run, I'm like, all right, I'll try that. You know, if someone says try the CBD, all right, I'll try that. You know, yeah. So I'm mixing and matching what works for me. And so far, I found, you know, CBD does work for me, and jiu-jitsu works perfectly for me with that. You yeah. know, and running as well. I love running, so really? Running helps me out. Yeah.
How much do you run?
I used to run every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now that, because it's hard to run after jiu-jitsu or before yeah, jiu-jitsu, sure. you know, so now I don't run as often, but I do, I'm one of those people that I really do get the runner's high. Like, it's one of the craziest feelings I've ever had.
What length of running would you do at a time?
It for sure had to be more than 3 miles. I don't think I've ever had a yeah. runner's high before 3 miles. So
was that like standard? You like when you were running every day, like 4 miles.
Or, oh, I was doing more than that. I've done like half marathons just at night by myself.
Oh my God.
I was really into running. Yeah.
Dude, that's that rules. I've never been able to get over the hump of like loving running. Like,
yeah, I think four miles, but I think, you know, it's funny. I think that's why I like it because people, of course, I hate that all the time, but I think that's why I like it so much because it sucks so fucking much.
Really?
But I think, yeah, every step is horrible. Every single step is like, fuck, why am I here? Why am I doing this? I've done like triathlons and duathlons, and you know, you get to the point where you're like, why the fuck am I running right now? But that's, then you feel good, so good afterwards. It's like, well, I did it, yeah. You know? So it's another rewarding thing.
That's so interesting, man.
Yeah, I think I like it because I hate it.
Yeah, you know? It's weird. It's, I'm not going to like psychoanalyze you like crazy. It just, you know, I don't fucking know. But it is interesting to me that there's a part of you, and maybe I'm just seeing it in myself also, that like, yeah, discomfort is like a safe space.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
That's yeah, I think you're 100% right. Yeah,
I don't know that. I wonder if that has to do with like early in life we were put in uncomfortable situations that we didn't have a choice over.
It's the whole get comfortable in the uncomfortable.
Yeah, and so now you get like to control it. Like you go like, well, no, I'm picking to be in this discomfort.
Yeah,
and it can't fucking do shit to me. Yeah. I still do it anyway.
Yeah,
that it's like, I don't know. It like creates a sense of like control and power over these things that were once uncontrollable.
Yeah.
Did you end up at the VA, like, did you go in specifically to say like, hey, I think I want to talk to somebody about this like PTSD stuff I've been hearing about, or were you there for another reason and it was like a coincidence? Or
I was there for another reason. I was there for, I believe, my back, and then they asked, they're like, do you want to see a mental health? And I was like, sure. So I was like, because I felt like, okay, yeah, it's time for me to do something about this.
That's fucking really important to know. Like, it takes, we got to make it, invite people and make it, you know, because I think it is hard. That's so just interesting, you know, and good job on them that they were like, hey, and by the way, are you interested in this?
Yeah.
How do they ask you? Because I feel like that's the kind of thing, like you were saying, there's stigma associated like for some people that like, I feel like you'd have to ask that in a cool way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They've made it way more. Just when I first went to the VA, it was like right after I got out, and it didn't feel good. Like I felt bad, you know? They just like kind of brushed me off a little bit. So I was like, okay, yeah, whatever. But now I think it's 2018. Now they know maybe that it's a real problem. So now they're like, yeah, come in, you know, we'll get you what you need, you know?
So it's kind of segues to my second question, and which is always like, what treatments or have you tried any medications that they've prescribed you or medications that weren't prescribed to you to deal with issues?
No, and I'll tell you why. Because I had a friend who actually overdosed on some of the stuff they gave him at the
VA. Do you know what they gave him?
I don't know what they gave him, but I know he overdosed on that, and he died. I think it was on and sleeping pills too. I think
that is something that I think people need to be aware of. My dad has he survived it, but he had an overdose, and it was from, I think, lithium, which is a bunch of other shit that he was on. But that you do have to be careful.
So that's why I've always been scared of taking any stuff like that. So that's why I think, just for me, it's been CBD. You know, CBD has been wonders for me.
Well, so when the VA says you have PTSD, like, what did they recommend then for like treating it and stuff? Did they try to put you on medication?
They try a bunch of the stuff. They try like group meetings with other veterans, which I think is a really good one. You know, you get to talk to other veterans. Just talking to people. I think it's one of the biggest things. Yeah.
That's dope. So they like, they go for like therapeutic options and stuff before, or also with.
They even have like yoga classes, you know, stuff like that.
Dude, yoga? Yeah. Do you do yoga ever?
I have, and I think it's awesome. It's wonderful. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
It's really weird. It's like I truly think that it's not weird. It's thousands of years old and people did it to like heal themselves. Like I do think yoga is one of those things that I would recommend to literally anyone. Like other things that, you know what I mean? Like certain things like, jiu-jitsu is not for everyone. Boxing is not for everyone. Lifting weights is for everyone. Yoga is like for everyone.
Right.
And I think the people who don't like it, who are like, I just get bored. You're the ones who need to do it.
Yeah.
Like,
the most, for real. Yeah, yeah.
Like whatever it is that's making it so you can't sit still in that, like, you should stay and think about that.
Definitely. Yeah.
All right. That's cool. And then, so the CBD, but I think that's also cool. Like, did you ever like drink a lot or anything like that?
I did. Yeah. I would drink a lot. Yeah.
Right. Cause after that's what I drank.
Yeah.
I drank a lot.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's associated with like soldiers and stuff too. It's almost like very socially acceptable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like given to you. I mean, when we got back, it was like cases and cases of beers, you know?
Really?
So it's like, it's just normal. It's like, it's just a big frat party, kind of, pretty much. Yeah.
But what was your drinking like? And because I don't think, you don't really drink that much now, do you?
No, yeah. I drink. I have a drink here and there. You know, with a burger or whatever, with a food. Yeah. But we drank a lot in the military, a lot. Plus, I was in Germany, so.
Sure. Was the drinking like, did you ever feel like you were doing it like for self-medicating reasons or like what? I mean, that's, you know what I mean? Like, it's a fine line.
Yeah.
Between like, am I just having a period of my life where I'm partying a lot, or like, I think a lot of people get by being like, hey, I just like to party. But yeah, like, you know, when I got real with myself, I was like, ooh, this is, I'm doing this because I fucking don't want to feel something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. It felt like a painkiller for the body and the mind, because, you know, we had to do exercise every single day. So we were tired, you know, you're beat.
Yeah.
Plus all the mind stuff. So it felt like a painkiller for both. You know, so we did drink a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, I do feel that. I was, I don't know, man. Alcohol is a funny thing, because I also think it can, honestly, like in the right context and amounts, like, it can be great.
Yeah.
It can, like,
100%.
So I described it once as like alcohol feels like a little bit like a pause button or like a slow motion button.
Yes.
So yeah, like, it'll take whatever feeling and make it like, so if you're having a wonderful night with friends, a great like dinner or like, you know, party, you all drink, and it kind of makes time like a little more buttery.
Right.
And it's like, oh, this is so, it makes the feelings.
Yeah.
But like, if you are sad or scared or like, fuck, you know, but can't process it or whatever, like, it'll slow shit down. Yeah. And it'll drag you in, because it numbs you a little bit too.
Right.
But it'll also like just makes it way longer before you're gonna process through that or heal through that pain. It's like, you really do just put it off.
Yeah.
All right, so that's great. CBD and fitness is like, and then talking to people are like the best. Cool. What's something cheesy that inspires you?
You guys, my training partners.
Really?
Yeah, all you guys. Like, you guys are awesome. So I get inspiration from all you guys. You
know? Dude, I feel that way so sincerely. And it's weird, because there's a lot of people that we train with. Like, I mean, I'm really bad at names. Like, yeah. I feel really guilty about how bad I am at names. But like, like, there are people who's like, I know their Instagram name is better than their real name or whatever. But like, or even if I don't know that, but I feel like I know them and they are important to me and close to me just because of the way they roll with, you know, because of like, and I don't mean the way they roll like, oh, they're really badass or something like that. Like, there is something really fucking weird, and you can't, it's hard to describe to anybody who doesn't like experience it, about like this, the way you learn about people, the way you communicate with each other without words, the like stuff you work out, like, I don't know. It's weird, man. I was thinking, you know, a lot of stuff like Me Too movement stuff and things like that is like, one thing I was thinking about, and this sounds like a weird segue, but I think it's like really related, is like, if sex ed was like, part of sex ed was like conversations openly about all the weird sex stuff people like to do, and also like how boundaries work and how consent works, and that you just communicate with people, and it's like, it's not like this sneaky world where you gotta trick people into liking you and fucking you or whatever, like, that truly, like, everybody's a person, and if it just wasn't weird and we knew how to have tools to talk about it. And I think sometimes jiu-jitsu teaches for violence, but like, there's kind of like sex and violence are like across, but like, you have these understanding of boundaries and respect and consent, like we're trying to kill each other, but it's because we're both agreeing to.
Right.
And we trust that, like, when you fuck it, that you're not going to break my foot when
I tap.
And that you will, which is also for me, if I don't tap.
Right.
Like that, like, I agree that I say, like, no, if you don't try to break my foot, then you don't love me.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And that there's, like, I don't know. I think there's something in that, the ability to create, like, because we're creating death simulations.
Yeah.
Like, we're putting our bodies into these, like, emotion, like, before you train or when you're new, you still have these, like, adrenaline responses just rolling. Yeah. And on tough days, I still get them. Like, my toes get numb.
Yeah.
That, like, I think it does something that you're going to these, like, dangerous emotional, psychological spaces.
Yeah.
But you're doing it among people who keep it safe in an environment that keeps it safe.
Yeah, and you trust your partners. You know,
yeah. So. I don't know. I agree. So that's 3-4. What's something dark about you?
Something dark about me.
I mean, that's broad when you've like been very open about like a lot of darkness that's touched your life and things, and that you know. So, you know, it doesn't have to be anything crazy, but.
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to have to think about that. I'm going to have to get back to you on that one. Yeah.
That's okay. You've been very generous. I don't want to like open Pandora's box, you know. What's the fourth one? That was four, something dark about you. I asked you these. Oh my God, I can't remember my own questions.
What's the last gorgeous thing you saw?
Wow, these are some good questions.
I ask them every time.
I know. The last gorgeous thing I saw. Oh, you know what? I saw the moon last night. I've never seen the moon like that. Yeah, it was very big, and it was huge. I've never seen it that huge. And it was right by downtown, and it was just like half of the moon. But I've never seen it like that.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Just color and size.
Yeah, just color. I've never seen the color. I've never seen the size.
What was the color?
It wasn't like the white. It was more yellowish, like dark brownish yellowish. It was amazing.
Yeah. That's great. Wait, let me make sure I got this. So it's like, we did diagnosis, we did prescription, we did dark about you, we did gorgeous thing. Did I skip something? And then, I think I'm skipping something. Oh, cheesy, you find inspiring. We did that. Okay, then we're on the last one. Great, we're six quick cues. The last one is, I have this thing, this don't kill yourself list, which is when I felt like killing myself, I started this thing. And I always started with lavender soap. Coffee sandwiches and lavender soap is like, because they're, and the idea is they're things that are easy to access, not too expensive necessarily. They're just every day you can get them, but they're wonderful and undeniable. And, there are reasons to stay alive. So I would like you to add one or several things, whatever you want, to the don't kill yourself list.
I would say coffee is one of them. And I think an important one is just have at least one friend that you can say absolutely anything to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if you just have one, that one friend that you can just let it out. You know? I think that's very important.
Yeah. Just like fucked up shit.
Yeah. Because there's so obviously you can't talk to everyone the same way. You know, but you got to have that one friend that you just can, like, man, you know what? I'm going through some shit or whatever, you know?
Yeah. So,
and they'll listen. Maybe they won't. They're just there to listen, you know? They don't have to say anything sometimes.
Yeah, that's like really powerful in a way that I still don't understand.
Yeah.
Like just being able to say it out loud to someone.
Yeah.
Man, thanks a lot
for doing this. Thank you for having me.
This fucking rules.
Yeah.
Speaking of like talking out loud and stuff and, I don't know. I think you're kind of like an amazing example. I thank you for sharing because I learned so much about you. We do jiu-jitsu together a bunch, but
all the time. Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't know so much of that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think you should. I'm sure you already do, but like you've gone through crazy shit. Even like if you had never done the army, just that stuff as a kid.
Yeah.
And to be who you are and how you are in the world is like dope, dude. Yeah. And I also think it's. I also think it's pretty cool. Like, I truly do believe in like the healing power of like weed. Like, I'm a total fucking stoner, about it. But like, it is a weird mystical plant where like it serves all these functions for people and can really fix you. And I think it's also very poetic that you that you're a soldier and now you tried and succeeded at healing yourself and were open even before you started that you're still healing yourself. Yeah. And now that's like your work is in this like giving medicine to the world, you know? I don't know. That's like very beautiful.
It's full circle.
Well, thanks, man.
Thank you.
I guess I'll see you back in class. And do you have like a Instagram or anything you want people to follow? And if you don't, it's okay. I just don't know. I was like, some people just think it's blanket statement. Like everybody wants publicity or whatever like that. But do you want anybody?
No.
All right. I appreciate that.
If you know me, you'll add me. You know, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Well, thank you so fucking much for being here, dude, and happy Veterans Day.
Thank you. Thank you for so much for having me. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, here we go. Bye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.